You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Saturday morning edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast. We're back to discuss the Ducks' Eastern road trip against three Canadian teams so far this week. And then we've got some news to talk about. The Ducks are actually somewhat in the news, so this is refreshing. We will have plenty to bite into there. And we're just going to kind of get through it all. Jake, we're first pod of the week. Are you ready? Is the mic properly dusted off?
Yes. The mic is properly dusted.
We hadn't recorded in so long that I had to switch computers because the other one just stopped working. So
yes,
that
so
says
that
a lot.
Is when I said technical difficulties on Twitter. That is what the technical difficulty was. Felix's computer decided to die.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened there. Very concerning. But we will press on as we always do. So let's just jump right in. I don't think there's any need to wait. There's no need to beat around the bush. Let's just do this thing. So 31 Thoughts, as you all know, if you're not aware, Elliot Friedman does a weekly blog over at Sportsnet. Just really with always very insightful from his insider perspective, what he's hearing around the league, different things of that nature. And thought number eight, let me just read it word for word. So in the interest of fairness, there are several teams who would be shocked if Anaheim dealt Josh Manson. Quote, "Your wife does not love you as much as the Ducks love him," one GM said. And then in parentheses, "My wife doesn't know anything about Manson, but admitted this is probably true." Trading Manson would also eliminate some serious edge and attitude from an organization that strongly identifies with those character traits. So that's the thought. That's number eight. Jake, your reaction to this?
You know what? It's kind of funny. Because 6 months ago, I may have agreed with this.
Uh-oh.
And
6 months ago?
Okay.
How about 6 weeks ago?
Not 6 weeks ago, but maybe 2 months ago, 3 months ago when you first proposed this idea. But here's the thing. This is a dumb idea, especially with where this franchise is. I think you could have made the argument 2 to 3 months ago that maybe this could be a quicker retool / rebuild. Because you didn't fully know what you had in the kids. Now that we've seen it, now that we've seen everything about this team, now that you also understand the expansion draft is coming up and you're potentially going to lose one of Maher or Gouley, and so you want to be able to protect one of those guys that you want to, because I know I put that out there on Twitter when this came out that the Ducks are now going to lose Maher or Gouley, and people have replied with, well, they're probably going to lose one of them anyways. The difference is, they don't have a choice in which one they lose at this point in time if they protect Manson. Mm-hmm. If they don't have to protect Manson, then they get to choose between the two and get to keep the one that they want. But that's a little bit besides the point. There's a lot of things kind of going on here that it's just the wrong way that the Ducks should be approaching this. We've seen that this team, yes, when healthy, they're not horrible, but they're still not a good team. They're mediocre. And being mediocre in the NHL is the worst thing that you can be. It is the absolute, you don't want to be mediocre. You either want to be bad or good. It's really odd to say that, but if you're mediocre, you're going to stay mediocre for a long time. It's very hard to get out of that area and become good. Because the reason why mainly is that in order to become a good team, you have to get good players in there. And here's the thing. The best way to do that is through the draft and through being high up in the draft. So unless you're a mediocre team and you go and you somehow get a miraculous draft lottery win, you're not going to get that high talent player through the draft then. And so that's why when we talk about this, about selling assets, you want to be able to sell off guys to be able to get futures that will help you. That it's almost as if you're kind of getting a lottery ball, and it potentially can come out. And you, so you want to get a player for Manson or picks for Manson that, no, they aren't as good as Manson right now. No, they're not going to help out the Ducks as much right now or next year as much as Manson will. But potentially 2 to 3 years down the line, they will be as good as Manson is now, which in 2 to 3 years down the line, Manson will not be as good as he is now. That's just how aging works. That's not me saying Manson's a bad player. That's just me simply saying Manson at 31 or 32 is not going to be the same player as Manson at 28. And so you want to be able to get that. And potentially, with a riskier player, maybe you're going to get a player that's better than Manson even. So there's a whole lot going on there that the Ducks really need to be figuring out, because the other part of this situation is, yes, Manson's on a team-friendly deal right now, which is important, but that expires not this not the summer of 2021,
but the summer
of 2022. And I can guarantee you, if he's on the Ducks and the Ducks are this high on him, they're going to want to re-sign him. That's going to be his first deal as an unrestricted free agent. And we've seen this time and time again. When a guy's an unrestricted free agent, especially for the first time, that's when he gets paid.
I don't think he's going to get the contract that we're thinking he's going to get, though, because he's going to be 31 by then. What team is going to give him the lucrative UFA extension?
I could very easily see the Ducks giving him. Well, what are we considering lucrative?
Well, I'm just saying he's not going to get your standard first crack at free agency contract extension, because he's not going to. Most of those guys, when they get to that point, they're 26, 27, 28, well, somewhere in that range. He's going to be 31 conservatively. So I don't think he's going to get that kind of big extension. I don't disagree with you that he's not going to get a big raise. He's definitely going to get a big raise, but I don't think it might be as crazy as we're thinking here.
Well, I think he's going to get a decent raise, and I don't think it's going to be a 7 or 8 year deal.
I think it's probably here's my prediction. Not to cut you off, my prediction would be 5 times 6, so 5 years for 6 AAV.
Yeah, which.
Which at 31 is not great. That's exactly, not what you want.
That's my point. That is the exact contract that I'm thinking they're going to sign him to, and that is not what you want for a 30 or 31-year-old. So here are the options that the Ducks have to them. You keep Manson for the next tour if they don't want to trade him.
Well, hold on a second. So I want to back us up a little bit.
Wait, real quick. Okay. I want to say this. Zo6 just subscribed to us with Twitch Prime and said, thanks, guys. Been listening to the podcast for a while, and says, go Ducks from Idaho. So,
Idaho.
I'm assuming it's probably very cold there, as I'm complaining all day about how cold it is here right now in the 50s. So,
Idaho, the gem state. The gem state. That's the nickname.
Is it?
Yeah.
They're known for potatoes, right?
Wow. Just painting with a broad brush. Okay. But let's back all the way up.
Yeah.
Let's back all the way up, because predictably a portion of Ducks Twitter had a meltdown over this news. Here is the thing. Go ahead.
Sorry. One thing that I do want to say for people watching the recorded version of this or watching the live stream. Yes, there is a slight delay on Felix's video. It is because of what we had talked about earlier on in the show.
Yeah, there's a delay. Deal with it. We have a show. We had to have a show today. So
making it work. Making it work.
We're making it work. Okay, but can I go now?
Yes.
Okay. So let's back all the way up. Ducks Twitter had a meltdown over this. And here's my question. Where in this statement, in this little blurb, does it say the Ducks are not going to trade Josh Manson? Where does it say, hey, this is for sure not going to happen? Where is there even a source from the Ducks? This is just hearsay around the league that the Ducks really like him. There's not even a, we don't think he's getting traded at all. There is nothing substantive in this report. So to me, when I first saw this, I had the reaction of, oh my goodness, of course they're not going to trade him. But the more I've thought about it, the more I think two things. One, logically, it still makes a lot of sense for the Ducks to trade him. And two, so actually three things. Two, the Ducks have to be sellers of this trade deadline in some form or fashion. And three, This is posturing. This is the Ducks trying to leverage the price that they can potentially obtain for Josh Manson. It could be posturing, right? We don't know if it is, but you can't just look at this and treat it as, oh, the Ducks are not going to deal Josh Manson. Of course the Ducks don't want to deal Josh Manson. He's an important piece to their team. He's still a good player despite his bad season. So, of course, they really like him as a player. He's an assistant captain. He's a really important piece. But putting this out there, to me, doesn't indicate that they're not trading him.
Well, supposedly, I guess Elliot Friedman also on the, I did not see this.
Well, so on his podcast, he basically made the point I'm making right now.
Okay.
Well,
I have not listened to 31 Thoughts, the podcast yet.
Not quite the same to the same degree, but he was saying I would be shocked if something to the effect of I would be shocked if the Ducks aren't sellers. So to me, this is just a lot of posturing. This is what we get this time of year, right?
I guess supposedly on headlines on Saturday, this is what I was talking about. And I heard this through listening, I believe, to the Steve Dangle podcast that they mentioned this. But that I guess he kind of poo-pooed the idea of Manson getting moved on Saturday headlines last week. So that's kind of where this is coming from in my head, is that along with kind of this blurb. And maybe I'll take a listen to 31 Thoughts, the podcast, though, after this and kind of really listen to what he said there. But to me, when I see this, this is Bob Murray or other essentially kind of saying that, no, I don't want to move him. But yeah, I mean, I could be wrong.
Because he probably doesn't want to move him, but that doesn't mean he won't.
Well, I guess this is, and that's why, I mean, we've talked about it. This deadline and this upcoming offseason is very critical to the Ducks team and the future of the Ducks team, because this offseason and this trade deadline could either propel the Ducks in their rebuild or set them back. Well, it's going to be one of those two options.
This is something that I wrote about in my latest article over at the Fourth Period, shameless plug. But I don't actually view it that way, where I don't think this is the trade deadline. I think this is the start of a window of trade deadlines for the Ducks. So I don't disagree with you entirely that, hey, there's no importance to this trade deadline. But the Ducks, hypothetically, are going to have two more cracks at flipping Josh Manson at a trade deadline, right? You can still sell him off next trade deadline, where a team can still get two playoff runs out of him. And then you could even still trade him in the last year of his deal. Now, agreed with you, though, that now is his highest value because you have the cost certainty. He's the youngest he'll be in the span of this deal. So it would make the most sense to try to trade him now. It might be more difficult now because the price would be higher. So all I was trying to get at is that the Ducks don't necessarily have to move all these pieces at this trade deadline because they will have other chances to do so.
See, here's my retort to that. And while, yes, that is factually correct, this is a Ducks team that needs as many pieces as they can get moving forward. And the best possible return that they can get for an asset that will not help them long term. Right. And so realistically, if you evaluate where Manson's at, where kind of where he's projecting to go, how he's aging, different things like that, I think it's a pretty safe thing to say that Manson realistically isn't going to be a main contributor to the Ducks team around the time the Ducks will be contending again. I don't think that's that outlandish of a statement. And so that is why you need to move him now, because you need to get something in return and you need to get the best possible return. And that's why I say that this deadline is very critical.
I don't disagree with you with that notion entirely. I'm just saying it's not necessarily do or die. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and they can move him at the draft. And I think that also gives them a very similar value as they would get right now. And maybe that's the more beneficial.
I think that might be the likeliest scenario is the draft.
Yeah. And but so we'll that's see. Fine. And that's fine. I'm not saying that they have to move him at this deadline, but they do need to move some guys at this deadline. And I think that
he's the easiest to move. Just cap-wise.
Well, no. The guy that they have to move this deadline is Derek Grant.
Oh, man. You're just tearing the heart out of the fan base with that.
So, let me add on this. So, there was a deal that was made this week between the Maple Leafs and the Los Angeles Kings.
Yes.
Where the Kings traded Kyle Clifford and Jack Campbell, and in return, got 2 third-round picks. One of them's a conditional pick where if Clifford resigns or if Campbell wins 6 games, I believe, one of those two, that third becomes a second.
Yeah.
And they also got Trevor Moore in return. So let me really quickly ask you this. How much value do you think Jack Campbell added to that deal? And how much do you think of it was just Kyle Clifford?
Oh, I think that trade is all about Jack Campbell.
Really? Oh, oh yeah. I'm of the opposite mind.
Well, what the heck? They need a backup goalie in the worst way.
Yeah, but goalies don't have that great of value.
If you look at their projections, with, for example, Dom Lucic's model at The Athletic, their projections for the season went up just by adding Campbell, standings-wise. This was all about Campbell. And Clifford helps, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of connections there, but this is about Jack Campbell.
Yeah, I don't know.
Here's the thing, though. I don't think that this was that great of a trade for them, personally.
For the Maple Leafs?
I think it's a huge gamble. I don't think Clifford's that good. I don't think he really does a lot for you. I know that he has good underlying metrics, but...
I think this is an absolute steal by the Kings.
Yeah, well, yes, from a Kings perspective, you have to love it. But from a Leafs perspective, I just look at that and think, well, Jack Campbell has been really good with the Kings, but so have other goalies who have been really good and gone to other places and not been as good. So to me, the environment that they put goalies in, it doesn't seem really conducive to goalie success. And so it's just no sure thing that Jack Campbell will thrive in Toronto. He could, but I don't view that as a sure thing. A lot of people were saying, oh, this is such a win-win. I think it's mostly a win-win.
Yeah, maybe it's just my view on it. I just don't see goalies as having that great of trade value. So I thought that majority of this value, or at least one of those thirds, let's say this, one of those thirds was due to Clifford.
Well, I think this is mostly about just that. Well, I think you could be right about that. I don't think that's unreasonable, but I think that most of this is about Jack Campbell.
Okay, but let's just say that one of those thirds was because of Kyle Clifford. That was where I was going with this.
Yeah.
I think you can make the argument Derek Grant, with the season he's having, could get you that same return.
Yeah.
Here's
the question that you will get. You're not necessarily getting it from me, but I'm just saying this is what you will get, is what is the 90th, let's say, overall pick worth to a Ducks team when they could have a locked-in quality fourth-line center?
Yeah, and so this is an argument I had a bit on Twitter with some people.
Oh, you had an argument on Twitter?
Yeah, shocker, shocker.
That's not like you.
No, not at all.
By the way, you and Derek Grant are now the same age. For those who don't know, it was Jake's birthday this week, so
it was. Send him some love on Thursday. Yes.
On Twitter.
Yes. Thanks. Thanks for doing that to me right there.
What do you mean?
Same age.
I'm trying to direct some positive vibes towards you.
Sure.
Anyway.
Sure. As you texted me, dirty 30s, as I'm not even 30.
Yeah.
Felix is that friend, by the way. He's that friend.
What does that mean? I'm a little concerned by that. Anyway, you were going to say something about Derek Grant.
I was going to say something. How the Ducks trade him. So, people have said, like, why would you want a mid-round pick when there's not that great of probability of that player turning out or different things like that? Because essentially on Twitter, I said, I am very jealous of the Kings right now because that deal seems like an absolute win and a steal for them. They got 2/3 for 2 assets that really aren't going to help them that much over this time span. And so here's the main thought process there, is that essentially the NHL draft is the lottery. I think that outside of even looking at the draft lottery as a whole, the NHL draft as a whole is a lottery. I think I've said this multiple times on the show, but every single draft pick that you get another weighted lottery ball. And so when you're higher in the first round, you have a better chance of hitting with a player that will long-term help you. As you go lower and lower and lower and get later and later picks, the percentage chance of those helping you becomes less and less. But why would you not want to increase your chances? Why would you not want to add more pieces when...
Well, the other thing is that getting a third-round pick for Derek Grant is almost like found money. Because Derek Grant is a fourth-line center who even the optimist probably didn't expect a season like this. So being able to flip him into a reasonably high pick is just like free value for the Ducks.
Well, yeah. And then also if you look at it like this, where Derek Grant's not under contract for any season after this. So realistically, it seems like he's very happy in Anaheim. So for people who want him to stay on the Ducks, there's a high likelihood that they could do what I was thinking they should do with Silverberg last year. Trade him, then sign him on July 1.
I could see that happening.
I could definitely see that happening.
Because he's been a suitcase his whole career. So, and by that, I mean he's changed a lot of teams. And yeah. So I could see that happening. But the thing with Derek Grant, just to clarify my point, is that, for example, trading Eric Goodbranson for a third-round pick isn't as great because Eric Goodbranson holds a somewhat important role on this team. He's a top-four defenseman who's playing reasonably well. So a third-round pick for that is a little more disappointing. But Derek Grant's a fourth-line center who, yeah, is having a nice season while shorthanded, but he doesn't hold this extremely valuable position on a roster. So getting a third-round pick for that is, do the math, it's pretty good for the team that's getting the third-round pick. But there's arguments either way. Anyway, so we should move on a little bit. I don't really see the Ducks. I think the favorite is probably that the Ducks don't trade Josh Manson at this deadline, but just looking at that report, I don't think that's enough to just totally rule it out either. I think that the Ducks are putting that out there. They want people to know that, so hopefully the offers come in a little hotter. That's my guess. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
You got anything left?
No, I don't think I have anything left in terms of trades. I am excited for the trade deadline, though. I love the trade deadline.
Well, we've got a break to go into here, so we're going to jump into that. And on the other side, we're going to talk some prospects, so we'll be right back. Okay, back from our first break. So, yeah, the trade deadline is going to be a lot of fun, no doubt. I think it's kind of picking up. I didn't think it was going to be that great this year, but we always find a way to get excited about it. One other thing I did want to add, though, about the Ducks kind of window here is that the all of their young players, so Steele, Jones, Kasha, Richie, they're all going to be RFAs in 2 years. And Troy Terry is going to be an RFA actually after this summer. So their window where they don't have to pay these guys anything, that window is shrinking. Now, I don't know what kind of contracts they're going to command, but their flexibility to be a good team is going to go down pretty shortly. And that's kind of the danger of holding on to these big contracts. I think that might be the biggest argument for moving out some of these older players, is that this team is going to get more expensive. And
yeah,
you have to balance that out.
And the other thing on that is, no, they're not going to probably get big raises, but it's still going to be a raise of some sort to them.
And also if these guys are as good as, let's say, their biggest supporters think they are, then should we not expect at least a significant step forward of some kind next season? Right? At some point, that should happen. I mean, Sam Steele is going to be 23. Max Jones is going to be 22. Troy Terry is going to be 23. So these guys are going to become real NHL players in short order. Another thing I would add is that Hampus Lindholm, after this year, has 2 years left on his deal. So he's going to get more expensive as well. And you don't want to be paying a lot for a bad team. So I think that maybe is another argument for why you should start moving out salary, because this team doesn't project as being a playoff team in the next year or two.
Well, and yeah, and so we've also talked about this. This team is not great this year. Why would you want to hold on to a core member of that team? Rework the core.
Right, but I don't think Josh Manson's been one of the problems of this team.
Not necessarily.
He's a guy who I think is a clear ticket forward. He's a guy who can get you something of value and propel your rebuild. That's the argument. And I think that's the correct take. It's just a matter of when to me. They cannot trade him this year, this draft or this trade deadline, but there's going to be a point where they trade him within the next 2 years. So anyway, that conversation is just never going to end, but that's fine. It's an interesting topic. I think people like trade talk. So moving on,
Bonnie may say you're now the one that's trade drunk.
Oh, I'm not trade drunk. I'm just being realistic here. This is how these things work. Jake is trade drunk, though. Jake wants to trade Derek Grant. Heartless.
Very you agreed heartless. With it.
No, I was just laying out the logic. Doesn't mean I agree with it. Okay, so Scott Wheeler, who is a great prospects writer at The Athletic, super in-depth. He's been doing a prospect rankings, so ranking every team's prospect pool from 31 to 1. So it's been this long countdown, and thankfully for Ducks fans, the Ducks have not been popping up at all in the last few weeks. They finally did. Yesterday, the Ducks ranked number 6 in his rankings, and that's got to feel good, right? Just kind of off the top here for the Ducks, a long-term outlook.
Yeah, especially because I think Corey Pronman did a similar type of thing over summer, and I believe the Ducks were 14th on his.
And, yes.
And so I believe, I mean, granted, this is Scott Wheeler versus Corey Pronman, so who knows where Wheeler would have had him.
Here's my opinion, just really quickly.
Go for it.
I find that Scott Wheeler is more of a progressive mind, where he seems to value skill and creativity more, and Corey Pronman seems more of like a traditional scout in his opinions. And so it wouldn't shock me that there's a disparity between the two.
Okay.
I also just enjoy Wheeler's articles more.
But yeah. Anyway. So kind of getting back to the big difference, I think if you were to maybe take the...
Well, the big difference is Trevor Zegras's World Junior.
Yes. Well, Trevor Zegras's World Junior, and I think by the reading the article, it seems Scott Wheeler is higher on Henry Thrun, which also probably plays a part in it, and Henry Thrun's had a pretty good year so far for Harvard. So if we want to jump into it, I mean, wasn't it Scott Wheeler who had Trevor Zegras as the number one prospect outside of the NHL, basically after the World Junior?
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. So Trevor Zegras is really the one that's carrying the weight of this ranking. Now, for clarity, for those who haven't read it or don't have an Athletic subscription, one important note is that he noted at the top, for now, so he included Max Comtois, Josh Mahura, Daniel Sprong, Isaac Lindstrom, and Brendan Gooley were included as prospects, while Max Jones, Troy Terry, and Jacob Larson were excluded, and Sam Steele is also considered fully graduated. And I think that makes sense. Troy Terry, the Ducks seem set on him being in the NHL lineup. Jacob Larson isn't going anywhere. Sam Steele isn't going anywhere. Max Jones has been a bit up and down, but mostly up. So I thought that that made sense. I would have been curious to know his thoughts on those players, but what did you think of that delineation?
It makes sense.
I think it makes sense. I think Daniel Sprong being in there is a little surprising, just because he's and Wheeler even admitted as such that Sprong is basically almost no longer a prospect. He's almost 23,
and that affected where he put him in the ranking. And he even put that in there. The fact that
well, let's just go down the list here. Okay. So Trevor Zegras, I mean, kind of write the story writes itself, but he had plenty of great things to say.
Yes, and kind of for those out there that haven't followed along that much, Trevor Zegras currently leads all under 19 collegiate players in points per game. This is per the article at 1.13 and assists at 19. And when I checked today, he's still leading the league in terms of actual like freshman scoring. There is a freshman, forgot the guy's name, on Harvard, but he's a 20-year-old freshman, so not exactly in the same class as Trevor Zegras.
Here's I think what's the most interesting from a speculative standpoint is that Scott Wheeler thinks that he would benefit from another year in college to take his game to the next level, potentially challenge for Hobie Baker, get in the gym, but, and I'm quoting, he wouldn't be surprised if he's one and done. I think if you're a Ducks fan, you want to see Zegras in the NHL right away, but what did you think of that?
I mean, it makes sense. The fact that if he goes back for another year, that he's probably going to be the best player in college hockey, not just the best freshman. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what he wants to do and depend on where the Ducks view him in the organization, what they do with their team. If Adam Henrique is moved out at the deadline or at the draft, I think maybe they'll try to push to have him come into the NHL and kind of really go young down the middle. It really depends on kind of where the Ducks roster is. Also, keep in mind, he's eligible for the AHL right away. Whenever he comes out of college, the 20-year-old limit does not apply to him because he has not played in major junior hockey. So he can go straight down to the AHL if they wanted him to. Here's my view on it, though. If he's going to come out of college, it shouldn't be for the AHL. It should be for the NHL. So
yeah. I don't think it'd be worth to have him come up and play in San Diego. I think he'd benefit more from being the best player in college hockey. So I agree with that.
Yeah. So I could see him My opinion, he comes out after this year. And maybe even comes out maybe even comes out in March after the Frozen Four is over.
Maybe. We'll see. Mm-hmm. Let's move on down the list. This one was a big surprise to me. So he had Maxime Comtois number two on the list.
Makes sense.
And I think that there's two reasons for this. One is Comtois is probably the closest to being an NHLer on this list. Well, one of the closest. And also, after Trevor Zegras, there's a really big gap between Zegras and the rest of this class. If you look at his actual ranking at the bottom of the article, Zegras is in a class of his own. And then after that, there's this big second tier. And I think there are arguments to be made for ordering those guys differently. His notes on Comtois were interesting. So he's a big believer in the skill of Comtois, that he's got good touch around the net. Not a guy who's going to drive his own line, which I think is a good take, because we haven't seen him do that. And just watching him play, he is more of a finisher type. He's a guy who is going to catch a pass with speed up the neutral zone and then be the one to kind of drive to the net. Now, some things that he also noted is that his skill doesn't necessarily pop out, but he does see him as being a guy who can eventually be a 50-point producer. So I think that overall that's a pretty good takeaway. Yeah. I think that I mainly agree with that. I think number two might be a little high, but considering the names on this list, I think it's a totally defensible take.
Yeah, I think it completely is. And I think a big part of this is not and actually, I'm going to throw a link in the Twitch chat. So for anyone with an Athletic subscription that are in the Twitch chat, I'm throwing a link in right now for you. So Max Comtois and anyone watching the recorded version or live version, I'm not going to have this up on the screen because it is the Athletic. And so don't want to give out their content for free, if that makes sense. So it makes sense because of how he was doing in the QMJHL last year. And I think that's a big part of it, that he was just so much better than everyone else last year in that league. And
yeah,
I think
mean,
that's,
he was also
important.
He was also a 20-year-old. But yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think he's still a guy that it's hard to judge him because he really hasn't shown anything at the NHL level this year. I think he looked better last year. So next year is the year that I'm going to be very curious to see. I'm kind of punting on this year for him, but the upside is still clearly there. Now, the name that I think caught a lot of people off guard, Henry Thrun, number three, so defenseman that the Ducks drafted in 2019, who's playing at Harvard this season, who actually we had a chance to see. Well, I didn't actually go, but he played in the game at Great Park Ice between Harvard and Arizona State. So some Ducks fans got to see him, but he's pretty high on him. Scott Wheeler is the puck moving ability, the skating, it's all there. And so that's really interesting to me. And that could be a steal. I mean, they got him 101st overall.
Yeah. And he is, so for anyone out there that doesn't really know, he's currently has 16 points in 22 games for Harvard this year, which is third on the team in terms of first year or freshman players in terms of point production, with one of those being that Nick Abruzzese, who is actually a 20 or 21 year old freshman. So it's kind of a different class than other typical draft or just drafted freshmen. So he's actually, if you take that guy out, second on the team and first on the team in terms of freshman defense scoring. And I know we don't like looking at plus minus in the NHL because there's much better stats out there, but when there's a lack of availability of other stuff, it's kind of at least a decent thing to look at. But he's currently leading all of Harvard at plus 15. So he's on the ice for more goals for than he is against. And that's a good sign. And especially if they can get value out of him, fourth rounder, right?
Yep.
And so that's
a good sign.
That's the exact reason why you stockpile those picks.
Yeah, exactly. And the Ducks do seem to have a tendency to get more out of those later picks.
Yes.
I don't actually have a stat on that, but plucking guys out of later rounds or the mid rounds, like Troy Terry, for example.
Yeah.
That and again, you have to kind of caution that with saying that, hey, we're not saying these guys are going to be stars, but getting useful NHL players out of the mid rounds is not something every team is able to do consistently.
Yes. And so that's why you stockpile picks. You get as many. That's why as you
trade Derek Grant for a third round pick.
Yeah, because maybe and the thing is, you're just giving yourself more kicks at the can. Maybe exactly. If the Ducks have one fourth round pick, they're able to select a Henry Throon every couple of years or every 4 years or so. What happens if you get two of those? You're doubling the chances of doing that essentially. Right. In a
I mean, if you look at previous draft boards and you look at the name, like you'll see a steal that occurred in a mid round and a later round, and you'll see the names selected before and after. Just having more picks in that range gives you more opportunities to be the team that gets that guy. So
yeah,
exactly. The point kind of makes itself. Number four. So we're just going to go down the list here. Number four, Braden Tracy. So interesting that, and I think that we've heard about this as well, that Tracy had a really good year last year and has not been quite as dominant this year, has not been quite as explosive as he was last year, but the skill level, the skating ability, the upside is still there. It looks like his upside will be determined by his ability to add strength, which makes sense. He's a very skinny guy right now, so he should be able to do that. That's something that all pro athletes go through. Interesting that he'll need some time before actually going back or getting to the pro levels, because Wheeler sees him as going back to junior next season, which makes sense. I don't know why the Ducks would bring him up. He hasn't really shown anything that would warrant that.
Nope. So makes sense. And that allows him to play in the World Juniors next year also.
Yeah. So I think you'll definitely benefit from another year in junior. It's not the same for everybody. You don't want everybody going straight to the NHL. Interesting, though, was number five to me, Josh Mahura. And I thought that the first sentence of this sums it all up to me. This is what he said. I'm surprised Mahura isn't a full-time NHLer at this point. And I agree with that. We've said that on this podcast all season. So that really made me happy, just that someone else agrees with us. Josh Mahura is an NHL defenseman. He's a guy who has shown that he can drive play in limited NHL usage. He's got the skill. He's not overly physical, but he's already a third-pairing player, and he has potential to be a second-pairing guy. And those are paraphrases of what he said. So, I mean, what did you think of that? Because I would have, you know, just with all of those things being said, I would have had him higher. I would have had him at maybe three or two, but I think maybe the number.
I think it's an age thing.
Yeah, exactly. I think that if a guy is that good in his teenage years, or a certain level in his teenage years, you rank him higher, even if he's not quite there yet.
Yeah,
it's more of a ranking on potential.
I mean, that first sentence kind of sums it up. We've talked about it. He's good and probably should be with the Ducks. Third round pick.
He's got Jacob Larson in his way. Yeah,
third round pick. Another third round pick. You have another. That's kind of the key as we're going through this. You look at how many of these guys aren't always necessarily first rounders. Mahura was a third round pick. You get more chances to try to get a player like that. And we've seen Mahura looks good. He looks like an NHLer. And I think the only defense of keeping him in the AHL is allowing him to play top minutes, get first power play unit, and essentially allow him to develop everything there before calling him up and using him in a third pairing role.
Here's an interesting thought to me, though. Josh Mahura is 21 now, and he's going to be 22 next season. So at what point does he make that step to the NHL? Because he's got 2 years left on his entry-level deal, well, one after this season. And Jacob Larson is an RFA this summer. And Eric Goodbranson has 2 years left on his deal. And then as far as the left side, you still have Lindholm and Fowler, who are occupying those top two pairings, who aren't going anywhere. So what is the path for Josh Mahura to get to the NHL right now with the Ducks? That's my curiosity out of all of this, because clearly he's very good, but I don't know what the path is going to be if the Ducks seem pretty set on making Jacob Larson their third pairing guy. Where do you go from there?
I think that they are set on having Josh Mahura as kind of being in the AHL all season, and then I think next year is when he gets his shot.
Right, but what I'm saying, I agree with that, but I'm saying next year, this reality is not going to be any different next year.
I mean, that's where what moves they make is important.
Well, the question for me is, what do you do with Jacob Larson? Because Jacob Larson to me seems to be the barrier to Josh Mahura being a regular in the lineup. And Jacob Larson has done nothing this year to prove that he could be potentially a second pairing guy. My question would be, could Josh Mahura become the seventh defenseman on this team? I think he's just going to have to become, him and Larson are just going to have to be a rotating cast next year on the third pairing. You have to give Mahura a shot at some point. So, interesting. I hadn't really thought of that, that there's not really a path for Josh Mahura right now. Going down the list, I mean, he's pretty high on Benoit Olivier-Grew at number six. Actually, really high on him. Just a guy who he thinks could be a dominant defensive player on the third line. He wins 60% of his faceoffs in junior. He's got the ability to manufacture offense shorthanded. He's got size, wins 50-50 battles. So, hey, that sounds like a guy who, I mean, he just turned 20, who could definitely be a useful third line center for the Ducks in the future. Yep.
Good birthday. Very good birthday.
Do you guys have the same birthday?
We do.
Wow. Buddies. Birthday buddies.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Okay. We'll finish off and at seven here.
I think Adam Henrique also, February 6th birthday.
Wowza.
Yeah.
Look at you. You're basically a Ducks player.
Adam Henrique is exactly 1 year older than me.
You're basically on the Ducks at this point.
Basically.
Okay, well, let's take a look at time here. Okay, let's jump into our second break. We'll round out this ranking on the other side, and then we might just jump into some questions. We'll see. We'll be right back. Okay, back from our second break. So let's just quickly blitz through a couple other parts of this ranking, because I think they're somewhat important to go through. Number seven, Daniel Sprong. I mean, he's going to be 23 next month, and on pure talent, and this is, I think, where I absolutely agree with Scott Wheeler. On pure talent, he says, he is the Ducks' second most talented prospect with the skills needed to put up points and play on his second line. He's got excellent puck skill, enough to beat defenders with stick handling alone, and a goal scorer's release. Yes, thank you. Finally. Finally, someone agrees with me. No, I'm just kidding. There's plenty of people who think that as well. The defensive play still hasn't been there, and it is a concern that he hasn't cracked the NHL at this point in his career, though. Yeah. I think that the defensive concern stuff is overblown, personally, at least in this season.
Is.
I think maybe it was true in the past, but it's not true anymore. So, anyway, number eight, Brendan Gooley. Interesting. So this is Scott, we were talking here. Gooley's a tough one for me because he never really sold me at the junior level. He hasn't figured out the NHL game yet, but he has proven he's a standout defenseman at the AHL level. Stylistically, his game is hard to project. Gooley is a good defender. Not a great defender and can get lost in his own zone. I think that we've seen that. He's got good offensive tools, good ability to exit the zone, but he doesn't have a dynamic quality offensively. He's not a scoring threat. He's not super comfortable under pressure. I think this is a pretty accurate assessment of Brendan Gooley.
Yeah.
And my concern with that is that sounds like a guy who's going to be a really good AHL player, but might never really be a serviceable NHL player.
Yeah.
That's what he's kind of profiling as. I'm not saying it can't happen, but he's already 22.
Yeah.
So how much runway does he have left?
Agreed. Yeah, I don't. He needs to be in the NHL by next season if he's going to have a shot.
Well, this is kind of the thing that we go back to with the left side for the Ducks blue line is that you have Jacob Larson there, and then you have Fowler Lindholm. So between Larson, Gooley, and Mahura, someone's got to make the jump at some point. And Brendan Gooley is easily third in that race.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because he should be, because I don't think Larson has really done anything. Although Larson and Holzer have been having really good numbers in the last few games. But Gooley seems a bit down. And then just the final two in the top 10, Isaac Lindstrom at number nine. This is interesting to me because Lindstrom is still very young and he's shown good moments at the AHL level and he's had some moments at the NHL. I think that the main argument here, just to kind of summarize for Wheeler, is that he just doesn't see him as a guy with a lot of upside, a guy who kind of excites you. He's a guy who's going to be an NHL player, but who's probably going to be a bottom six forward.
Yeah, that honestly sounds about right.
Which is a bit unfortunate because he was a first round pick.
Yeah, I feel like at the time we were critical of the first round pick because of how safe it felt.
There's two sides to that coin, though. On one hand, in the late 20s or late teens, you could get a guy who's not going to be an NHL player at all. So yep. maybe going safe, I don't know, is that better?
Well,
I don't know.
Well, we'll see how the long, I mean, maybe from a structural standpoint within the Ducks, maybe that's a good thing that he, I mean, not saying it's a good thing that their first rounder is only going to be a fourth or third liner, but if they have Zegras and can get, and Steele maybe eventually becomes that second line center, then you have kind of a perfect setup, especially if you're able to set up the wage structure and the cap salary where it's set up, where it's a first, second, and third liner, or first, second, and third line center. It's all homegrown players and it's set up really nicely in that fact. So that's not exactly what you want to see, but maybe it ends up working out well.
I see Lundestrom becoming this team's kind of, in the best of scenarios, I see him becoming this team's kind of go-to defensive third line center. And then hopefully that means Steele has become a really reliable second line center, and then you have Zegras as your top line guy. Yeah. That's the dream right now for the Ducks. And maybe eventually Grew finds his way into that conversation. Okay, rounding out the top 10, we're not going to go into 11 through 17. Lukas Dostal. So, didn't have a great World Juniors, but he's one of the better teenage goalies in hockey right now. Has a good track record across multiple seasons and leagues at the pro level. Hey, you want to talk about where Lukas Dostal was drafted? Another mid-round guy. Another guy who the Ducks just kind of plucked out of thin air. So, yeah, I think that overall, just to kind of summarize this top 10, the Ducks are in a good spot. The Ducks have quality prospects. They don't have stars in the waiting. You could argue the very few teams do, but this is the Ducks have another wave that's coming, and that wave is led by Trevor Zegras, and who knows where the Ducks will be picking this summer at this draft, but they have another crack at this, at really improving their future prospects, and acquiring some more picks sure wouldn't hurt that.
So let's jump into a brief recap of each game. I mean, just off the top, we're not going to get into any sort of in-depth recap like we typically do because of how much news there was this week, basically. But the Ducks beat the Senators in overtime in a shootout 3-2. They lost to the Canadiens in overtime 3-2. And then
What happened in that game?
What hat are you wearing?
this hat doesn't count.
That hat is not a Canadiens hat. That hat is a Ducks hat.
Well, I have a Canadiens hat, but it's really beat up. So.
Yeah, so you're wearing a Ducks hat, not a Canadiens hat.
Jeff Petrie, overtime winner. Okay, and then last night, pretty exciting game. The Ducks could have easily beat Toronto last night. I thought that it was one of their better games of the season. Yes. Now, in overtime, that they were clearly outmatched, but the Ducks had an opportunity to win that game, and they got contributions from Nick Deslauriers, who had a goal scorers type goal, a one-timer from the right circle on his off wing.
The pass from Cam Fowler to him was so perfect. And but not that, taking away from Deslauriers, that finish is a very hard finish to make. The one-timer with a hard pass across going perfect. Yeah. I don't know if we're ever going to see Nick Deslauriers score a goal like that.
Do that again. Yeah, like, I mean, that's got
to
be
props to him, but yeah.
That's got to be up there in his career goals. But yeah, I thought that this was a really good game from the Ducks. You look at the expected goals, and they were barely edged out by the Leafs. It was 2.6 to 2.43. So
yeah,
you love to see that if you're a Ducks fan.
The Ducks came on very strong in the third period, basically. Now, really put the pressure on the Maple moment, Leafs in that game.
The moment that a lot of people are taking away, though, was an unfortunate one in the third period. Jake Muzzin. So Andre Kasha gets a pass in the slot or the high circle, gets a backhander off at the net, and then from there kind of just is watching his shot on the follow through, and Jake Muzzin comes in and hits him in the head. I mean, there's no other way to describe that play. It was a clear headshot. Kasha went down. He had to go to the quiet room, and as Dallas Eakins pointed out in his presser, he was very upset. He said that takes a guy out of one of our best players out in a critical stage of the game. And so I am surprised I haven't been on Twitter, but there hasn't been any kind of murmurs about there being any supplemental discipline. I thought that was a clear headshot. And as Dallas Eakins said, those are the kinds of hits we're looking to take out of the game.
Yeah.
And
so now up on the screen is actually kind of a gif of the, a gif of the play. The maybe argument you could say is that Kasha's falling down, which kind of puts his head into a vulnerable spot. And maybe that honestly, I'm not saying that that's what I agree with. I'm saying that that is maybe the argument that player safety would make here is that Kasha's going down, but
it wasn't like a standstill.
No, yeah. And it wasn't like he really was bent over. It wasn't as if him going down put his head into that spot. I think the contact would have been made with the head no matter what. I'm not sure if maybe we just haven't fully heard yet, but you would assume if there was going to be a hearing for it, it would have come out at this point in time. This Twitter account, NHL Player Safety Mod, which I do not follow, but got retweeted into my feed, had this comment on it, which I kind of agree with. No, Kasha falling does not cause a head contact. This there's a still taken from, and it's kind of right below the video. Basically, Kasha's head is up and it is a hockey stance and falling through from the shot. Muzzin's approach kind of catches him in the head. And so,
yeah, and also there's a not insignificant period of time between that follow through and the hit. There's about a good second and a half, I would say.
Yeah.
So, it's really unfortunate because Andre Kasha just can't catch a break with this stuff, it seems.
No.
So,
it
really sucks.
And the hard thing is it's not as if he's like, you look at this play. Some people may say you put yourself into a position and you're injury prone, different things like that. I'm not sure how you could look at this play and say he's putting himself into a dangerous spot.
Right. Like, no, he's just getting a shot off. He's doing what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly.
So, hate to see it, but it looks like he was fine. There hasn't been any news, at least as of yet, of any
injury
concussion
or
sequels.
Like that.
So, we'll see. Kind of a rough night, though, for some of the Ducks' lines at 5-on-5. Really outside of the Raquel Getzlaf-Silberg line, which dominated 68.9%. Everyone else pretty much got caved in. So that's not great. But I thought overall this week, though, the line of Richie, Henrique, and Terry was quite good. And then Jones, Steele, and Kasha, especially against Montreal, had a really good game. So that line, the Jones... Should also note that Max Jones scored yesterday on a really nice breakaway goal.
Yes.
That line of Jones, Kasha, and Steele has become a legit third line for the Ducks. And we've talked about that before, but it's only becoming more true as time has gone on.
Well, it's continuing. And it makes sense if you logically think about it, because Jones and Kasha are really good play drivers. They're really good at getting shot quantity on net and really... producing shots, so you're putting Sam Steele with them, and it almost in a way protects them. And I think that's a very good thing long term. And the other line,
go ahead. Yeah.
And I was gonna say on the other lines, it kind of makes sense. And obviously, the Getzlaf line, that's just the three best players on the team playing together. That's going to work out well. There's not a whole lot of explanation needed there. But on the Henrique line, I really like that line because Richie's kind of a guy that just goes into areas and gets pucks for the rest of the line and can really get in front of the net and really produce shots from a high danger area. Henrique's kind of a weird player. He's a trigger man, but he kind of does a lot of different things also.
That should be a new element of the Anaheim Calling podcast drinking game.
Trigger man for Adam Henrique.
Drink when Jake calls Adam Henrique a trigger man.
Yeah, exactly. And then Troy Terry's the setup guy. And I think Terry had a couple moments over the course of the week where he held on to the puck a little bit too long. But I think for the most part, Terry's been doing a good job of setting up other players.
Terry has looked good on that line overall. Yeah. He had a decent game yesterday against Toronto. I thought he looked good against Montreal. He looks a little more aggressive out there, which is what you want to see, especially on that line where you don't really have, he really is the creator on that line. Yeah. So he has to be more aggressive with the puck.
And on the power play last night, for the third goal of the game, he had a nice little feed. And the thing is, maybe you would want him to shoot that, but that little pass to Kasha's in a more dangerous spot on the power play. And
or just
you're
not covered by like two guys.
Well, and you're forcing Campbell to move. And it's really opening up some areas, and then Henrique makes a great play to finish that batting out of midair. But there's a lot of good things going on, and I think overall, long term for the Ducks, this little stretch here is gonna maybe not
the
this year.
The Ducks are playing good hockey.
Yeah,
I think their last 2 weeks, really, if you look at right before the All-Star break / bye week, and since that time, outside of the San Jose game. And maybe the Ottawa game, I think that they've been playing pretty well. I think that they've been in almost every game. they've worked. I mean, they've clearly been competing out there, and there have been signs of progress. The emergence of that third line, even Larson and Holzer not being terrible, Larson with Delzato being a good mix. I think that this is one of the better stretches of Ducks hockey. They're still losing games, so I think as a fan, you're probably a little upset by that, but there's signs of progress, and that's important at this stage in the season.
Yeah, that's what you need to see from this team
this year. And if you're a Jake Rudolph type fan, this is the best. Because they're losing, the draft odds go up, and they're playing well. So,
Exactly.
One other note from this game, though, Eric Branson had to leave in the first period against Toronto, did not come back, so that jumbled up the pairings quite a bit. You saw Larson with Lindholm. No update yet on Eric Branson after the game, so we'll just have to monitor that, but that could potentially not only be a big blow to the Ducks' just current setup on their blue line, but if the Ducks were thinking about trading him at the deadline, that could also be somewhat significant. Yep. So,
by the way,
we'll just have to see.
Want a fun fact from last night's game?
Sure. Hit me.
Jack Campbell, every single time he's debuted for a new NHL team, it was against the Ducks. Did it in, I believe, 2013 or 2014 when he was on the Stars. I was actually at that game. I think that was Frederick Anderson's first game. And then also his very first game for the Kings was in relief, I believe, and came in against the Ducks. And then last night was his first game for the Maple Leafs. So, random fun fact.
Yeah, you went viral with that fun fact.
A little bit.
Big viral guy.
Still getting likes.
Don't forget the little people is all I'm saying.
Yeah, sure.
Don't forget the little folk. Okay, well, that's kind of all we've got for this week's wrap-up. Did you have any other thoughts on the games, or do we have any questions we can get to?
So we've got this question from, or let me mention this real quick, actually, before we get to this question. One thing that I've noticed from this week, and it's something that's kind of been going on for a bit now, the Ducks 3-on-3 is really just not great.
Against Toronto, it was insanely bad.
Well, against Montreal, also not great.
Well, the thing with Montreal is that lasted, 20 seconds?
Yeah,
but it was still awful. And it was a blunder between Fowler and Kasha, who just couldn't figure out who to take. And so Petrie walked in and then did what he did on Gibson. Yeah, but you're not wrong about that. They've been objectively bad at 3-on-3 for a long time now.
Yeah.
And that costs you points in the standings over time.
It definitely does. All right, so let's get to this question from Heyo DFLO. Said, question, has Kasha reached his ceiling?
Probably not, because just in terms of how aging curves work, his best seasons are probably going to be the next two or three. He's 24 now, and let's see when his birthday is. Hey, maybe he'll have the same birthday as Jake. So he's going to turn 25 this November. So I think his best seasons are probably still ahead of him. He is reaching, to answer your question, though, he is kind of reaching the top of that arc, but he will probably stay there for the next couple seasons if all goes well.
Yeah. Agreed with that. And also,
he's been very productive lately. He's putting up points.
He has. And that's, I mean, basically, it's essentially what we've been preaching, the fact that if you continue to generate expected goals, generate good chances, yet not all of them are going to go in, but eventually some of them will, and you're going to start getting some goals. And Nick Ritchie's another one. Nick Ritchie's had a couple goals over the last little bit and getting some points. And so it's essentially what we've been preaching for this entire year, that no, they may not come right away, and you may not necessarily see it in terms of comparing it to expected goals, but eventually the goals and expected goals should converge in a way.
Yeah. So Kasha has 7 points in his last 11 games. So
yeah. He's playing well. Ginger Wolf. Let's do real quick. Considering AHL and NHL guys, who is your ideal Ducks team this season?
This season? Oh, so if... Okay, I get what he's saying. Yeah, so I think you would have Josh Mahura on the third pairing.
And I think the fourth line, I would probably do something along the lines of Lundestrom, Sprong, Sherwood.
I don't know about Lundestrom, but I would definitely have Sherwood and Sprong on that fourth line.
Yeah.
And outside of that, I don't know how much different it would be.
Yeah, I think it's about the same outside of that. But getting Sprong in the lineup, getting Sherwood in there, I think
so
that's what
do
I
you
do.
Have, on your ideal team, do you have Max Comtois in the NHL?
Ooh.
I don't. I think he's on a top line with Lundestrom in San Diego.
probably is my ideal spot for development. Yeah, probably. And Mahura up over Larson, or Mahura and Larson as a pairing.
Actually, I take it all back. My ideal third pairing has Simon Benoit.
No, ideal third pairing has Chris Weidman on the right side and Mahura on the left.
Okay, Nick Pappas.
Yeah, exactly. Ginger Wolf mentioned Weidman. So, yeah, Chris Weidman on the right. Chris Weidman, this is going to be something that we're going to need to keep banging the drum on. Chris Weidman deserves a shot with the Ducks this year.
Yeah, but he's a 30-year-old AHLer.
Yeah, he's better like than those on guys, the power. He's better on the power play than probably any of the Ducks defensemen right now, though.
I mean, that's not really saying much, but yes, you're not wrong about that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, the Ducks' blue line has been a problem the last couple years.
Raquel's goatee asks us, who of the graduated prospects, Terry Steele Jones, will have the biggest career impact with the Ducks?
Ooh, tough to say. Yeah. It feels like a dead heat right now. No one has totally pulled away. I'm kind of partial to Max Jones because I like the way he plays, and I think that those kind of guys can have an impact. I don't know. I actually don't really have a strong stance on this. I mean, I'm thinking I know what you're going to say, but
I'm just going to go with my bias and say Troy Terry.
Well, Troy Terry does seem to have a lot of upside, but at the same time, he is going to be 23 this year, and we have yet to see him really be productive at all in the NHL, so that's a bit concerning, but he still has about a couple more years before we can really know what he's going to be.
Let me throw this out there and let me see if you agree with it or not. I think Troy Terry has the highest ceiling out of those three. I think Max Jones has the highest floor out of those three.
Interesting. So we're just completely discarding Sam Steele?
I think that he's in the middle of those two. I don't think he has as high of a floor as Max Jones. I don't think he has as high of a ceiling as Troy Terry. Not saying that I'm disregarding him. I'm just saying if we're purely looking at ceiling and floor, I think that by that, I mean, Troy Terry, if all things go right, he's going to be the best player out of those three. He has the highest skill ceiling out of any of those three players, the most skilled, I think, out of them. So if all things and he can put it together, Terry is going to be the best out of those three. I think Max Jones, if everything goes wrong for those three, he's going to be the best out of those three, if that makes sense. I think Max Jones does more for the Ducks, even when he's not going well, than any of those other three do, because he generates shots at a very high rate. And now they might not all be from high quality areas. He may not have the highest skill, but if you're generating a lot of shots, you're creating chances for yourself and creating rebound opportunities for your teammates. Whereas Terry with the skill has to be able to create chances. So if he's turns the puck over, if he is not able to create, if things go wrong, then he doesn't really do a whole lot to help the team. But if he's able to put it together and create for everyone else, he's going to have the biggest impact.
Yeah, I think Max Jones is the youngest of the three, and so I think we might even underrate his ceiling a little bit. But
maybe.
I would probably say that the median outcome for these three guys is I think Troy Terry probably has, like, I don't disagree with what you're saying. I'm just curious what'll happen with Sam Steele. Curious. Because he hasn't really shown a lot this year, and he just turned 22, so he still has another year before he's not really considered a prospect anymore. So a full year. So I'm just curious where he ends up, because this is a guy who was where was Max Jones selected?
Max Jones was selected in the first round ahead of Sam Steele.
Yeah. So Max Jones was the highest of these three picks.
Yeah.
Sam Steele was the second. So it'll be interesting. I don't know. It's a dead heat right now in my eyes.
Yep. Don't disagree.
Okay, we got anything else?
No, I think that's probably going to do it for the night. I did not mention that if you want to support the show on Twitch and want to join in, you can find this at twitch.tv/acpod, where you can, if you have Twitch Prime, you get one free Twitch Prime sub each and every month. If you have Amazon Prime, you do have to hit that subscribe button every 30 days. It looks like we have one more question potentially coming in from Ginger Wolf, so we'll get to that when it comes through. But, so you can help us out there. Oh, his question is, why don't we see Terry in the shootout anymore? That's an interesting question.
I don't know, because he hasn't scored.
Maybe. I don't know if he's had a chance in the shootout so really this year, though.
Yeah, I don't know. The Ducks also haven't been in that many shootouts. So
no, I mean, Andre Kasha has been pretty reliable in the shootout with that move. Jakob Silfverberg.
Well, that's
the thing. Jakob Silfverberg,
Kasha, and Silfverberg are the go-to guys, and then it's almost. And then Raquel is in there.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I think I don't know if Terry's really scored that much on the shootout, like you said, though, this year or last year when he's given chances.
Terry just doesn't score. Period.
I think eventually he'll put it together.
It's just not his thing. He has 4 goals in 37 games.
Where are the point totals at, by the way, for Jones, Terry, and Steele right now?
So Terry has 10 points in 37 games. He has 3 goals and 7 assists. And then we go over to Max Jones, and he has, speaking of guys who can't score, so he has 6 goals, but he's played in 41 games and he's got 8 points. He only has 2 assists. But
yeah, that's not good.
6 goals is better than 3. And then we go over to Sam Steele, and Sam Steele has 17 points in 47 games. So
yeah,
he's got 4 goals and 13 assists. Now I think he was up to 10 or 12 really early in the season. So. I mean, of course, you always look at the end result, but he's been on a bit of a dry spell. But he is the most productive of those guys. So he's also been in the lineup the most consistently.
Yep. So I think that's going to do it for us today. Almost said tonight.
Yep. Well, thanks to everyone for tuning in on this Saturday morning. I hope that you enjoyed the show. A couple different ways that you can support us. We do have a Patreon page, so patreon.com/acpod. There's 2 ways that you can support us there. For $1 pledge a month, you get access to our patrons-only Discord chat where we have a live game chat. So during Ducks games, we just go back and forth talking about different things. Jake complains about the commentators. It's a lot of fun.
I do. I do.
This week, though, we didn't really do it just because of those Eastern start games.
It's been a bit of a crazy week also.
Well, the game started at 4 p.m., so a lot of people are still at work, including ourselves, so it just wasn't doable. But basically, to outline the Discord chat, on game nights that start at the regular Pacific start time, you can almost lock that in that we will have the Discord chat. So it's a lot of fun, and it's $1 a month. You get more interaction with us, and it's a good time. Now, if you want to elevate that one step further, you can pledge $5 a month, so you still get access to the chat, but you also get 2 bonus Patreon episodes a month. And those are a lot of fun for us because we talk about league-wide topics. We also go a little further in depth on the Ducks. Sometimes we talk about movies. We're all over the place there, but it's a lot of fun. And if you enjoy the kind of banter of this show, the banter element, there's a lot of that. they're a bit more laid back. So definitely check that out. That's at patreon.com/acpod. Another way to support the show, check us out on Apple Podcasts. Just type in Anaheim Calling and leave a rating and a review. So if you don't want to spend any money, fair enough. This review just takes a couple minutes and at most, and it goes a long way. It helps us climb up those charts. We just love to hear from you guys, and it's a permanent contribution. So check us out there. If you're not on Apple Podcasts, we are on YouTube. You can check us out there. We're also on Spotify and Stitcher. Now, you can find us on social media. Jake is on Twitter at ReindeerGames91. He is viral, so get him while he's hot, while he's still viral.
Sure.
At ReindeerGames91. Sure. I am on Twitter at Felix_Sicard. I've got some articles up from now and then about the Ducks over at the4thperiod.com. And, of course, check out AnaheimCalling.com. At Anaheim Calling on Twitter. So that is going to do it for us for this show, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will catch you at the next show. Have a good weekend.
Bye.